This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Monday edition, two down, one to go. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump met last night in St. Louis for the second of three presidential debates. We'll take a look at the style and substance of the debate with debate coach Brett O'Donnell in just a moment. And since Friday, WikiLeaks has released over 4,000 emails from the inbox of John Podesta, chairman of Hillary Clinton's campaign. Is there anything of significance in these illegally obtained emails? And has the WikiLeaks dump been overshadowed by the Washington Post dump of the disgusting comments of Donald Trump? We'll talk about that with Washington Examiner reporter Sarah Westwood. Also, some Christians are so disgusted with the whole presidential election and the choices before them that they're saying they're just not going to vote. You know what? I understand your frustration, and quite frankly, I feel it. But before you make that final decision, I've got something you might want to see. We'll talk about that a little bit later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you'd like to find out more throughout the program of various resources available. Lots of stuff there for you at TonyPerkins.com. Also, if you happen to miss anything on the way home tonight, you can listen later at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. All right, you may have watched it last night. I watched most of it. But last night's presidential debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, I think got pretty ugly. All right, I just think we've reached a new low in presidential politics. But that's my opinion. I mean, I know politics has been ugly for a long time, but it just seems to be in a downward spiral. It's like a race to the bottom. You know, Donald Trump was under a lot of pressure to perform well last night and to give an account for the tape of him making lewd comments about women. Hillary Clinton had her own issues with the dump of WikiLeaks emails on Friday that came from her campaign chairman, John Podesta, from his inbox. Well, Brett O'Donnell is a former debate coach at Liberty University. He's now O'Donnell and Associate Strategic Communications and actually consults with a number of candidates, including presidential candidates, on matters such as this. And he joins me now. Brett, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
All right, let's first, I want to look at both style and substance of this debate last night, because I'm sure you were analyzing it as you watched him. But let me just ask you this before we start looking at the style of the two candidates. Is my assessment right that we've reached a new low in presidential politics? Do you agree?
Well, I think that's actually an understatement. I just can't imagine presidential rhetoric reaching the level that it's reached. I don't think any of us could have imagined that two presidential candidates would be discussing the topics that they discussed last night, meaning, you know, Trump's sex tape, but also Hillary Clinton's continual lying and some of the things that she has done in the way that she's described the American people and how she's handled herself when she was Secretary of State. I mean, this election, more than any other, has turned intensely personal. And it's not just the persona of one of the candidates. It's both the candidates that has become the focus. The problem with that is the big losers in this are the American people, because we're not talking as much about issues as we should be. And, that's a problem for moving the country forward.
I agree with that. I would add, though, that what troubles me most about this election is in the choice before us, the debate that we see having, the conversation we see having, the nation having, is I think that's reflective of where we are as a nation. I think we have reached, look, these are two candidates that were selected by their various parties. The Democrats put forth Hillary and the Republicans put forth Donald Trump. I do have to say that, I think this is reflective of America. They just didn't get there on their own.
No, I think that you're probably right, and it could be that sometimes the saying goes, we don't get the elected leaders we want, we get what we deserve. And we have two intensely flawed candidates running in this election, and so I think that that could be reflective of where we are.
Well, let's talk now. Let's just step back for a minute. Let's look at the debate. We'll go to the substance in a minute. But, Brett, let me ask you about style. What did you take away from last night in terms of the stylistic performance of both of the candidates?
Yeah, I actually thought Trump was a lot better this debate than he was the first debate, stylistically included. Hillary Clinton is very wooden. She is not very good at relating to audiences and talking to the heart. I thought when Trump actually got on issues, stylistically, he was pretty good. I mean, he was talking to voters about Obamacare, about ISIS, about securing the country, and did so in a way that seemed to connect a little better with voters, in my mind. So I thought that he was a lot better stylistically than he was in the first debate, and I thought, as I predicted, that Hillary would be pretty wooden. She certainly is not Bill Clinton in the town hall meeting, feeling the pain of the people in the audience.
Right.
I thought Trump was a lot better.
He's not polished. But he does appear to be authentic in the way he communicates with the audience. It's him. It's not. Doesn't always logically follow. He doesn't always finish his sentences correctly and so on and so forth. But Hillary seems, as you said, she's very stiff, very, and it looks like an attempt to be polished, but it just doesn't seem real.
No. She's had authenticity problems ever since she's been running for office. This was a problem back in 2007 when she ran the first time, and in fact, had she not manufactured crying episode in New Hampshire, she would have gotten beat much earlier by Barack Obama in that primary season. This is a problem that Saturday Night Live makes fun of her for consistently, that she's just not very relatable to audiences.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad you're with us on this Monday afternoon. Brett O'Donnell, my guest. We're taking a look back at last night's debate, the second of three presidential debates, kind of looking at both the performance stylistically and from a standpoint of the substance that the candidates got into. Brett, that's one of the things in my view that has been missing in this election cycle has been substance. Now, of course, I think policy is important because that's really what that's why you're electing somebody. Unfortunately, I don't think that's what the American public pays attention to, but we certainly haven't gotten much of that in this cycle. Did that change last night?
I thought it changed a little bit. One of the things that I will commend Donald Trump for doing is, a lot of us have said what would be important for him to do in the wake of the tape that was released on Friday, would be to apologize, take total responsibility, and be very contrite, and then move on to substance and talk about things that actually matter to real Americans, like Obamacare and ISIS and the economy. And while I didn't think he did a very good job of apologizing, I did think he did a pretty good job of pivoting over to issues. Mm-hmm. And so we heard a lot more policy. Unfortunately, in one place, he kind of got crossways with his vice president on Syria. And I still think that foreign policy continues to be a problem for Donald Trump. But certainly on the domestic side, particularly on Obamacare, he got Hillary to admit that Obamacare is flawed and needs to be fixed. And I think once you go there, I think that you're winning that debate on Obamacare. So I thought he had a good night in at least getting to substance more than he has. And I thought that on a couple places, he really pinned her down, particularly on Obamacare. And then in terms of discussing her emails and her explanation of the transcripts on blaming that on watching the Lincoln movie and attributing it to Lincoln was just beyond the pale. And I think he was able to effectively call her out at places. So I thought he had a better night substantively than he had in the first debate, that's for sure.
Yeah, I would agree. I think the area that I thought provided the greatest contrast, and there were many contrasts in the debate last night, Obamacare, he said he wants to replace it with something that is more market-based. She basically just wants to tweak it, but keep it. But one of the areas that I thought was provided the greatest contrast between the two candidates was on the Supreme Court. That was a great question that was asked, because it is, I believe, at the top of the list of concerns of the American public. And that was, when looking, what would you prioritize as the most important aspect of selecting a Supreme Court justice? And I thought there was great contrast there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with Hillary Clinton's description, it became very clear that she has got a specific list of issues that will act as a litmus test. And so she let everyone know without hesitation that if you want Supreme Court justices who are going to make law from the bench and rule very liberally, you should vote for her. And he made it very clear that he would go in the opposite direction, that he wanted justices that didn't make law from the bench. And he's released a specific list of judges, which I think is a very good thing and smart thing to do.
Right.
She was very liberal on the court issue, and he was able to expose that last night.
And I think to that point, she was very specific, and I think appealing to the liberal base of the party when she said that she would make sure, I want to see, and this is quoting from her, I would want to see the Supreme Court reverse Citizens United and get dark money out of our politics. Donald doesn't support that. Voting rights are a big part of our country. And then she goes on to say that she would also want to see, she was talking about Donald's candidates, that they would want to reverse Roe v. Wade and marriage equality. I want a Supreme Court that understands you shouldn't have any more rights than anybody else. I want to change the balance of the Supreme Court, and I regret that Congress has not done its job. I thought it was very revealing when she said that she wanted to change the balance of the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and that's really what's at stake in this election. It's not just the next 4 years we're talking about. It's the next 40 years that we're talking about being at stake in this election, because in the next 4 years, she could very definitely have several court appointments, which would change the court for a couple of generations to come.
Right.
And she
acknowledged
how
that.
She would do that.
Yeah, acknowledged that. Brett, we're out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. As always, appreciate your insights.
You're very welcome. Good to be with you.
All right, folks. We're going to come back on the other side of this break. Sarah Westwood, a reporter with the Washington Examiner. We're going to talk about this WikiLeaks dump, some on Friday, some today, campaign files of emails, rather, from Hillary Clinton. We're going to talk about that. And is that being overshadowed by Trump's problems? We're going to talk about that and more. Don't go away.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
I can't begin to tell you how much AFR Talk has blessed my life. And it's so good to have a voice out there that is giving the Christian worldview.
Hey, y'all, this is Trucker Dave from Hammond, New York. And AFR has been a big blessing to me and many other truck drivers out here on the highways and byways of America as we roam far from home and enjoy uplifting stories, uplifting the ministry, and all the programming that the AFR has to offer. So I'm happy to be a proud supporter of AFR, and I hope that all my trucking brothers and trucking sisters who know the Lord will also reach out and dig deep to support American Family Radio right now. Thank you.
Your financial gift keeps your family equipped for the culture war. Join us for our three-day share-a-thon beginning October 18th. Listener-supported American Family Radio.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. There's actually a trusted health care option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian health care sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable health care for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your health care. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical health care. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Listening to Washington Watch, I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter, at T Perkins. All right, a little bit later, we're going to open up the phone lines, but first, want to continue our discussion of presidential politics. And in one of the more fiery moments in last night's debate was when Donald Trump really attacked the moderators, and I do think it was imbalanced. But, you know, of course, what do you expect? But he went after him for failing to ask Hillary about any questions about the email scandal. I mean, this is an ongoing scandal. I mean, there were WikiLeaks dumped about 2,000 emails on Friday, about another 2,000 this morning. And it's not getting a lot of coverage because the focus has been on Donald Trump's problems and the comments, vulgar, indefensible comments that he made a few years ago. Joining me now to talk about this is Sarah Westwood. She is with the Washington Examiner. Sarah, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, you've been tracking this. You've written about these latest emails from John Podesta's inbox, who was Hillary Clinton's campaign manager. Anything, or campaign chairman, anything in here that Hillary is trying to sweep under the rug?
Well, certainly there are a lot of emails here that the Podesta campaign would rather have not come to light. I mean, we saw a concerted effort over a period of several months where the Clinton campaign was actively trying to distract the media from her email controversy, whether that was announcing policy positions, times to distract from particular developments in the email saga, such as when the State Department was preparing to release emails, whether it was trying to make the argument about Benghazi rather than the email controversy because they thought that they could win the battle on Benghazi, but they knew they couldn't win the battle on the emails. It showed that the Clinton campaign was aware that that controversy had the potential to bring down their candidate, and they did everything in their power to change the conversation away from email.
Well, do we see the media basically taking that bait? I mean, Donald Trump brought it up multiple times in this debate. He didn't really go there in the first debate, but the 33,000 emails that were deleted that had been subpoenaed by Congress, the bleaching of the hard drives, removing the emails. I mean, is the media avoiding talking about Clinton's problems?
Certainly, the media would like to think that the email scandal is over. The FBI investigation has come to a close. The Benghazi investigation is all but over. Really, the only investigative bodies that are still looking into the FBI, or excuse me, to the Clinton emails, are Republican-led committees like the House Oversight Committee and the House Judiciary Committee. And the Clinton campaign is running sort of a classic Clintonian playbook strategy, which is to dismiss this as old news even before the ink is dry on the story. So anytime that questions about the email scandal crops up, such as in the debate, the Clintons point to the body of evidence that already exists that there was no law breaking. Now, we can argue that the FBI case did expose evidence that Clinton's staff knowingly flouted the law and then tried to cover it up, but nobody was indicted, and the Clintons point to that in trying to make this scandal disappear.
So, Sarah, what do we know about these two boxes of printed emails that recently disappeared? What do we know about that?
Well, we don't know much. We know, though, that there was a gap between, I believe, January 2009 to March 2009, when we don't have any Clinton emails. And the Clinton campaign has come up with different explanations for that. Sometimes that, you know, there was a glitch, a problem getting the server online, and so they happened to lose all the emails from that time period. And we just know that the FBI mentioned briefly in a couple hundred pages of notes that they put out last month, the 14 banker boxes of printed out emails arrived at the State Department, and eventually they could only account for 12. Now, we don't know the relation to the time period gaps in her emails to the disappearance of these banker boxes of pages, but it certainly raises questions about how, if the government was taking such pains to preserve these records, how two boxes of records could disappear like that.
You're a kind of a watchdog reporter, investigative journalist. You look at these things. I'm going to borrow a line from Hillary Clinton, and I think some Americans may think this, not many that are listening to this program, but what difference does it make? I mean, what difference does it make about these emails that there were 33,000 that disappeared, were not provided for, didn't give them to Congress? I mean, does this really matter?
It matters because it goes to questions of Hillary Clinton's judgment. It goes to questions of trust in her. And certainly the scandal really isn't over because, as you may know, the State Department is set to release three more batches of Hillary Clinton's deleted emails between now and Election Day. These are emails that the FBI managed to recover off the servers that they confiscated from her staff. So this isn't over for her. And the more she's on record denying specific aspects of the scandal, the more difficult it becomes for her, because then, you know, they have a record of her denying something that may eventually turn out to be true. And by the way, we saw that sort of calculation in the WikiLeaks emails. For example, there's one conversation among high-level campaign aides where they suggest having Hillary Clinton go out and make a series of statements and jokes about the emails. And then another campaign aide cautions them against doing so by saying, look, we don't know what's in these emails. That might turn out to be false later on, so we actually should not send Hillary Clinton out there to make definitive statements like that, because they truly didn't know how much of this is going to be exposed to the public.
Interesting. Well, we'll continue to watch it, because I'm sure it's going to continue to be a story. Sarah Westwood, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
All right, that's Sarah Westwood with the Washington Examiner. To find out more, you can actually read her articles. Go to TonyPerkins.com. I think it does matter. I think it, especially the fact that you have a subpoena from Congress, and after the subpoena was delivered, emails were deleted. I mean, I do think that, you know, most Americans, if they responded to the way Hillary Clinton has responded, they would be in jail. And in the handling of classified material, it was a mistake. It was not only a mistake, it was criminal. It was wrong. She violated the law. All right, folks, when we come back, if you're thinking about sitting on the sidelines in this election, you might want to hear what's coming up.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
One of the things that is happening early this week is the very start of earnings season. As always, third quarter earnings seasons will start with the reporting of Alcoa, and then we will begin to see the reporting of earnings of the S&P 500 companies. Now, most expect overall the S&P 500 companies will be once again mostly negative as far as earnings go. If that is true, it's going to be the sixth straight quarter in a row that we have seen that. Now, 90% of the time, that is always followed by recession or very difficult time in the markets. And I think that's got some traders spooked for certain. And I think that the likelihood of entering into recession next year has certainly increased over the last couple of weeks as we look at data. It looks like the Federal Reserve has spooked investors out of gold, obviously talking a little bit more hawkish, indicating that December could be the month they raise rates. Well, wait a minute. You just said that it looks like we could be headed into some recession next year. Why would the Federal Reserve then raise rates? Why? Because the Federal Reserve desperately needs ammunition in their toolbox. They have none. They could step up quantitative easing. They could go to negative interest rates, or they could have a little rate to cut. And right now, there's not much to cut, maybe 25 basis points. And I think they'd like a little bit more ammunition should we get into some difficult times. So we'll have to wait and see. Again, earnings. It's all going to be about earnings this week.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us this afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, I know I've talked to a few folks. You know, I see it in social media. A lot of people talking about Christians, a number of Christians, not a lot, a number of Christians. So talking about, you know, I'm just so disgusted with the whole process, disgusted with the choice that's before us. And, you know, I'm just not going to vote. Just not going to do it. I just can't. I'm just not going to vote. Well, I understand that. I'm disgusted with what I see, disheartened. But folks, there is no sanctuary on the sidelines. You and I cannot avoid having to make a decision. In large part, the problem we face as a nation and as Christians in particular is that this is the result of our lack of engagement and involvement as Christians, not just in this election, but in the government and the culture of our country as a whole. You know, we are left with a choice that is less than desirable. And quite frankly, many people don't want to make that choice. So I want to help you make a decision. And we have a resource that's on our website. It's a short video, about 2 minutes and 30 seconds. And it's in regards to the party platforms. Now, this is significant because the party platforms, more than you think, actually govern what the parties do. Not formally, but a study reveals how closely the party actually sticks to its platform. I want you to listen to the audio of this video. This is on our website. You can post it on your Facebook page. You can share it with friends. But I want you to listen to this, and then we're going to talk about it.
Let's talk about party platforms. This might seem boring, but they're important. Every 4 years, Democrats and Republicans gather, and each writes a document to establish how they will govern. That document is called a platform. It's a big deal because the platform defines what the parties believe and the policies they will pursue. Sure, there are times when politicians don't vote with their respective party platforms. Republicans vote with theirs nearly 9/10 of the time. Democrats, nearly 3/4. A very large amount of the time, what you see in the platform is what you get with your politician. So, let's take a look at the platforms. On our first freedom, the freedom of religion, the Democrat platform is silent on the right of Americans to live according to their beliefs outside the walls of their churches and places of worship. The GOP platform affirms the rights of conscience for all, and for the first time, the platform calls for a repeal of the 1954 Johnson Amendment, which effectively silenced churches on issues deemed political. On life, Democrats, for the first time, call for the federal government to force taxpayers to fund elective abortion. Democrats believe unequivocally that every woman should have access to safe and legal abortion. And to fund this access, their platform calls for repealing the Hyde Amendment. Republicans support an end to abortion and the funding of abortion, and the GOP supports a human life amendment to the Constitution. On marriage, Democrats embrace the redefinition of marriage, stating LGBT people have the right to marry the person they love. Republicans believe the cornerstone of society is natural marriage, the union of one man and one woman. On judicial appointments, Democrats promise to appoint judges who protect a woman's right to abortion and see the Constitution as a blueprint for progress. Republicans support judges who respect traditional family values and the sanctity of innocent human life. They seek to enable courts to begin to reverse the long line of activist decisions. On school choice, Democrats offer no support for families who want private or faith-based schooling for their children. The GOP platform supports homeschooling, private or parochial schools, and vouchers. These things matter, and that little R and that little D next to a candidate's name, that says a lot. The parties are telling you what they will do. The question is, now that you know, what will you do?
Again, that's a video, that video resource we've put together that you can find at TonyPerkins.com. I know it's a little long. Normally, don't do that kind of thing. But I wanted you to hear. It's a comparison of the party platforms. And it goes down the list. And of course, there's more. There's also a printout that you can get at TonyPerkins.com that goes into greater detail, covers actually a few more issues than the video did. Does a comparison, a big issue has been the transgender bathroom policy in our schools. The Republican Party, in their platform, goes on record opposing the Obama administration's Title IX transgender bathroom edict, since it is once illegal, dangerous, and ignores privacy issues and imposes social and cultural revolution upon the American people by wrongly redefining sex discrimination to include sexual orientation, other categories. That's quoting from the party platform. The Democrats, they support the president's redefinition of sex discrimination to include transgender bathrooms, showers, locker rooms, and so forth in universities and schools. So it's a great resource for you. Again, go to TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about that. Does it matter to you where the parties stand on the issues? And I'm going to tell you something at the beginning of that video, that audio that we played, that talked about how often the parties actually adhere to their platform. I'm going to talk about that when we come back, and then we're going to take your phone calls here at Washington Watch, 866-372-7234. Does it matter to you which party is in power based on what they have stated in their public documents that they'll pursue? We're going to talk about that here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
One of the more emotional times on our tour of Israel is when we go to the house of Caiaphas. This is where Jesus Christ was held the night before his appearance before Pilate. And we see the dungeon where he was held. And it's just a very striking thing to be there knowing our Lord suffered in this way and was treated in this way. That's one of the places we'll visit, is the house of Caiaphas, where the trial took place as well. Well, for more information on our tour of Israel and all the places we'll see and all the places we'll go, it's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country. Our phone number is 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5 for more information. Or if you want to go on the internet, twholyland.com. Go to the website, twholyland.com. Come see the land of the Bible with us in March.
On November 8th, our nation will choose a president who will serve as commander-in-chief to protect our country and allies from terrorist attack, and who will nominate the next Supreme Court justice. Voters will also be choosing national and state legislators and officials at the local level. AFA Action urges you to learn which candidates would support religious liberty or strengthen national security. Be an informed voter. Visit AFAAction.net to get the AFA Action Voter Guide, and then vote.
Consider serving the Lord with Friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. There's actually a trusted health care option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian health care sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable health care for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your health care. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical health care. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. All right, talking party platforms and their significance. What difference does it make, or does it make a difference to you? There was a study that was conducted looking at party platforms over a 30-year period. And what was found, this was done by a university in Texas, 74% of the time, Democrats actually legislated according to their platform. They actually, meaning they pursued those things that were in their platform became law. Republicans, and I was shocked when I actually saw this, but it really showed how important this is and why it should factor in when we are voting. According to this study, the Republicans voted with their party's platform 89% of the time. So the things that were in there, those were the things that became law. If they weren't in there, they weren't necessarily things they pursued. So it is an important guiding document. So that said, when we're looking at this election, and that was from the Stephen Austin University in Texas that did this research, that, you know, if you just kind of go to the sidelines and you don't vote, you are allowing someone else to decide. So if for no other reason, looking at the party platforms and where the parties stand on the issues should help you make a decision, even if you have to choose between two candidates that you quite frankly don't like. So let's talk about it. Do the party platforms matter to you? Do you think it might it help you? As you see the stark contrast between the two parties on core issues, might that prompt you to vote for a candidate that you quite frankly don't find acceptable because it is the only choice before you? Let's talk about it. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Shirley in Tennessee. Shirley, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. I've got to tell you, I'm definitely one of those. I've been on the sidelines, not
I mean, I know I don't want Hillary, but I had actually thought I would vote third party. But last night's debate, the moderator was so ugly and condescending. The woman, she really made some of us want to jump through our TV because she acted as if this were her debate instead of letting the people debate and express their opinions, and maybe she can go out with her friends and discuss it over tea, whether she liked it or not. She was very ugly. She had a little growl in her voice, and Mr. Trump listen to me and all this. And it really made me, for the first time, say, I'm going to go and push that button for Trump, because she's desperately trying to find something to hold against him. And when people are that desperate, it tells me that that's the better candidate. One thing I'd say to my fellow African-Americans is they better really think with their minds, because many of them that I know are Christians, and Hillary's going to do everything she said, which will hit and bat against our Christianity, our rights. But I'm hoping that we can have I'm hoping that Trump will at least not do. I believe that the Republicans, we can keep things pretty much the way they are right now by voting for Trump, because the Republicans will stand against him and the Democrats, as you saw that group of sellouts who were selling him out just because of something that was allegedly said 11 years ago, but they're not listening to what Clinton has said recently. So, you know, I just feel better about him now after that debate because of the moderator's ugliness and her desperation to find something wicked on him.
That's interesting, Shirley. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate the enthusiastic call and insight. That I wonder how. I mean, I did think the hosts were a bit biased, but as I mentioned earlier, look, the media has no longer become kind of an impartial referee just presenting facts. And this, you know, news 24/7 news cycle, you know, everybody's got to get out there and grab headlines. And so these, you've got all of these shows at night on cable news that are really not news shows. They're opinion shows. They're commentators. And so journalists are trying to grab headlines. And I just, yeah, it's interesting, though, that someone would make a decision based upon the bias of the questioners, the moderators. That would, I think, make candidates want to make sure that even if a moderator is in their camp, they're a little more balanced and not biased, pushing people to their opponent. Interesting, Shirley. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate you listening to Washington Watch. All right, let's go to Florida where John is on the line. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
Okay, thanks for having me on. Mr. Trump will bring Christianity a little bit more than the woman, what's her name? And anyway, I hope everyone can realize that he's apologetic for his indiscretions on what he was talking about, but he should be a better, more Christian leader than the other one. What's her name?
Yeah, Hillary. Yeah, all right. Thanks, John. I appreciate it. I think his apology could have been a little more, he could have been a little more aggressive in his apology. I mean, I know he acknowledged it, said, look, there's no justification. I don't care locker room talk or what. It just, it's what he said. It's not appropriate anywhere. Locker room, closet, boardroom, does not matter. It's just not appropriate, and there's no justification for it. And I feel like I think he should have been more aggressive in apologizing for it and saying, you know what, it was wrong. And I want to tell you, as your president, I will not conduct myself that way. It was an embarrassment to me, my family, and to my supporters. And I am sorry. And I'm going to surround myself with people that are going to help me be accountable so that I will not say and do things like that again. I mean, I just think, and the American people have proven themselves to be very forgiving. If one fesses up and says, you know what, I did do wrong. And yes, he did apologize. I just think he could have been a little better at that apology. It's troubling to me. Now, as John said, when I look at this, I look at it from a standpoint, you look at the party platform and you see where the candidates stand on the issues, and there's clear contrast on the issues. And I think this is more of voting for the issues, their positions on the issues, than the certainly the character of the candidates. Because I think on both sides, we are running a deficit. 866-372-7234, the number to call to get on the conversation this afternoon. Talk about party platforms. You can find a comparison at TonyPerkins.com. That video, we played the audio earlier. You can see the video at that website, as well as a downloadable comparison that you can share with friends. And you can take it to your church, share it there as well. Actually, I showed it last night in our church so that folks would see the difference between the two parties, because people don't, the party leaders do not want you to know that. They do not want you to know, especially when they're talking about, in the Democratic Party, talking about taxpayer funding of abortion. They want to force every American to pay for elective abortions by, for the first time since the late 70s, of repealing the Hyde Amendment. It's a very liberal, aggressive agenda. And the flip side, the Republican, for you liberal-minded people, you'll hate the Republican Party platform because it is the most conservative ever. And part of that's because I wrote a lot of it. But anyway, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Ohio, where Larry is on the line. Larry, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Beautiful day.
It is. Your thoughts on the party platforms?
I mean, to me, the party platform is way more important than even the person, as long as the person represents the platform. And my understanding of the platform from growing up, my dad telling me, is, you know, there's nothing wrong with being conservative, first of all. You know, everybody, you know, should be a little more conservative with a lot of things in life.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think people understand this abortion thing. That's a human life.
Yes.
And the platform of a conservative, you know, we do not accept that. And the Democratic platform, they support it to the extreme, where even late term abortions, you know, and that baby is completely capable of living outside of the woman, you know. So that's a human life, and for it to have no rights, from Hillary Clinton's mouth, a fetus has no rights. I don't think that should be agreeable to anybody with a heart or a soul. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you know, I was also taught that Republican conservative party also wants less government controlling a lot of things. You know, we should be able to make a say in what my kids learn. And I don't want them to go to school and learn the sex education that's going on, this gender fluidity. You know, my little girls like little girl things, and I'm not going to push them into the boy zone because it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
So, yeah, to me, the platform is a huge, huge importance.
Well, Larry, the platform speaks to all of those issues that you just brought up. So it's very clear the contrast between the parties could not be clearer. You talk about sex education in our schools. You know, we should be teaching kids to read and write. The Republican Party platform says supports sexual risk avoidance education that sets abstinence until marriage as the responsible and respected standard of behavior. That's a quote from the Republican Party platform. The Democratic Party platform promotes condom-based sex education, comprehensive sex education. And it goes on, religious liberty. And, of course, you mentioned the life issue. The Republican Party, quote, proud to be the party that protects human life and offers real solutions for women and strongly opposes infanticide, supports the following, the ban, the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, a human life constitutional amendment, a ban on abortion at 20 weeks, and it goes on and on and on. And the Democratic Party, we will continue to stand up to Republicans' efforts to defund Planned Parenthood, will overturn federal and state laws and policies that impede a woman's access to abortion, and calls for government-funded abortion on demand through all 9 months of pregnancy by repealing the Hyde Amendment, which bars federal money from elective abortions. So, Larry, you're right on. Clear contrast between the two parties on the issues that matter. All right, let's try to work in another call here. Let's go to Texas, where Becky is on the line. Becky, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. What are your thoughts?
I just wanted to say, I think everybody is putting way too much emphasis on this video deal. Guys have been talking smack in the locker room since high school, and Donald Trump not being saved back 10 years ago, we can't expect him to act like a Christian human being, because I don't even know that he even went to church 10 years ago, but they're just making too much of an issue of this. And, you know, he's told us that he is going to stand by the Republican platform, and that's what we need to go by, and quit making such a big deal about talk. It's the action of Hillary that we're fighting against, not talk.
All right. Well, thank you, Becky. I appreciate the call. I did make a comment similar to Becky's regarding, you know, you have someone that is, you know, she made the point that they're not a believer, not a Christian, and they act like it, and we're surprised by it. But I do believe that there's been a coarsening of our society in this sense. Of course, you see it on TV. You see it in the music. I mean, have you heard some of the music, the lyrics, some of the popular music today? It's on TV. It surrounds it. I mean, sex is in everything. And it's a very, as I said, it's been a coarsening of our culture. Now, and this is one of the things as Christians, you know, we're to be transformed by the renewing of our mind, as we read in Romans chapter 12. It's a difficult thing. It requires work as believers to rise above the culture in which we live. And I believe we need to have a standard that we would hope our leaders would aspire to. But I have to agree with Becky that we can't expect people who do not know the Lord to live as if they did. However, we still need to have behavior that is appropriate. And when we fall short, we need to own up to it and say, you know what, I'm going to do better. And I would long for the day, and it's been a while, that we could have leaders in public office that we, and in any place, I mean, you know, we have a lot of sports figures and others that they would just live in a way that could be true role models for our kids. And unfortunately, I think a lot of Americans find comfort in having flawed leaders, because then we can hide in the shadow of their failures. Just a thought. All right, folks, thanks so much. Sorry I didn't get to the rest of the calls, but we may continue this conversation, because I do think we need to keep our eye on what is really at stake here. As many of you already know, and you were very perceptive in these calls today. We're going to talk more about that this week. Until then, the website, TonyPerkins.com. Let me leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul. When you've done all you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, that's it. Keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.